Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is Secret Societies, a Christian Perspective. And to talk with me about that, I have Joel Paulus. Joel Paulus. And let me tell you about Joel. Joel has a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Musical Theater. He has a Master's of Apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary. And he actually spoke on this topic at the National Conference on Spiritual Discernment. I wasn't able to listen to your particular talk, so I figured, well, I want to hear about it. What better way than to invite you on the show and let you talk about it? So welcome to the show, Joel.
It's good to be here.
Now, Joel, you are interesting in the fact that you have this Bachelor's of Fine Arts. So you are actually a ballet dancer and an apologist. That's an interesting combination.
Yes, it is.
I don't get that very often. I got to say you're the first.
Well, I tell you, it's interesting because a lot of my apologetic experience came from being backstage in different theaters that I would work in and just talking with the different actors and dancers that I would work with. You work in close proximity to different people and you get to know each other very well, and people would find out you're a Christian, or maybe they would want to know more about Christianity. Maybe they have a question, and you'd be the go-to guy since you're right there. And you're
right. All right.
Sometimes they'd have a question. I'd be like, you know, that's a great question. Let me go find out for you. I'll get back with you.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. God has his army strategically placed in every type of profession in the world.
That's right.
And you're an example of that.
God does have his people everywhere.
Yes. So, Joe, we're talking about secret society. So what is a secret society?
Well, yeah, secret society is really an umbrella term. There are so many different organizations that could really be called a secret society. I think a better term to use would, for our purposes, would be a society with secrets, because obviously they're not that secret. We're talking about them. We know about them. So a secret society generally, for what we're going to look at today, would be a group or an organization that makes certain claims, has an elite membership, is not open to the public, perhaps has a ritual or certain protocol that is only done within their group and isn't talked about or discussed outside of their meeting quarters, per se.
There are some main secret societies, and I'm going to go through them, or you can go through them, and we could just talk about them, because people, some of these, you know, people have heard of, and I'm sure some of them people have not heard of, but just, I'm just curious as to what differentiates one secret society from another, and actually, what do they all have in common?
Sure.
Like, the biggest one, I'm sure, is Masons.
Yes, the Masons. That's probably the one that most everybody is at least familiar with. They can be called the Freemasons, Masons. Sometimes you'll see A and F and M on the building outside if you pass one. That usually stands for the Free and Accepted Masons, or Ancient Free and Accepted Masons, and that goes way back to the beginning where there was an actual division, as most groups do, have politics with another group. The actual founding of modern Masonry, which is what we are normally familiar with when we're discussing Masons, started in June, I believe it was June 24th, 1717, even though some sources make claims back to biblical times.
Yeah, we can, I've heard that. Yes. The Solomon's Temple.
Absolutely, and we'll get to that hopefully okay. In a minute.
Okay.
Yes, so what we are going to be looking at basically has its root in the year 1717, in London, actually, just a meeting of four different lodges that met together to form the first Grand Lodge, and that was the beginning of it all. And they had a difference over a voting procedure or something minor like that. And so the newer splinter group referred to themselves as the Free and Accepted Masons, and the older group as the Ancient. But be that as it may, as things have come down the pike, no pun intended, there's a Albert Pike.
Right? Yeah. I'm sure most people don't know, but.
Right, he was a handsome fellow. I wish I had a picture, you know. We have one of his books we'll be looking at and quoting him in a second. But pretty much turned it to what we have today in the 1800s. And there's a lot of speculation of you know, the Masons have their fingers in the government and they're going to rule the world and they're in control of everything. And as we'll see, that's not necessarily the case. But they do have an interesting history to follow if you want to take the time to just kind of do some research. There's a lot of sources out there, the library, the internet, of course. How it masonry works is basically there's a local meeting house called a lodge, and this is a place where an initiate would go to become a member. Perhaps you've seen a bumper sticker that says, "To be one, ask one." Okay, sometimes you'll see a car with a symbol that looks like a square and a compass.
Now, I've seen, I'm definitely familiar with the symbol.
Yes.
My grandfather was a Mason, 32nd degree, and he had books that were cryptic that you couldn't even read and all this kind of stuff.
A lot of symbols. Symbols are very important to Masons, and that's really the core of their teaching. They do have things to say about who we are and why we're here. In fact, let's just take a look at this, because the reason why a Christian should be at least familiar with or concerned with what they associate themselves with is because of what these groups stand for. And there's reason to believe that you shouldn't be involved with something if it has a religious slant to it, if you're identifying yourself as a Christian. And this is a book that called The Meaning of Masonry. And it says that, speaking of Masonry, that in its broad and more vital doctrine, Masonry was essentially a philosophic and religious system expressed in dramatic ceremonial. It is a system intended to supply answers to the three great questions that press so inexorably upon the attention of every thoughtful man and that are subject around which all religions and all philosophies move. What am I? Whence come I? Whither go I? In a larger sense, then, our conventional limited one, the Masonic candidate is presumed to enter the order in search of light upon these problems, light that he is presumed not to have succeeded in finding elsewhere. That's a really interesting claim, especially as a Christian. Jesus is the light, and in the book of John, especially, he says, "I am the light."
Right.
So, as a Christian, it would be very hard to reconcile seeking light in Freemasonry when Jesus is the light.
And what's interesting is that all of those questions are answered by a biblical worldview.
Yes.
A Christian worldview. I mean, we have the answers. And the whole thought about, you know, haven't found it anywhere else, well, that seems to indicate that this person, to me, is not a Christian. Because if you're a Christian, you found the answers there.
Or just doesn't have a discernment.
Yeah,
because and what's interesting about this whole ritual is that when you're outside the lodge, which is normally called the Blue Lodge because of the blue ceiling, it's supposed to represent heaven. There are three degrees: the Entered Apprentice, the Fellow Craft, and the Master Mason. And then most people stop there. You can go on, and there's a branch. There's the Scottish Rite and the York Rite. And most people, especially the so-called Christian Masons, would be following the Scottish Rite. And that's who Albert Pike basically is I guess you might say, grandfather of what is done today. And those are the numbered degrees, okay. Up to 32. And once you hit the 32nd degree, then you can become a Shriner if you so choose, which is a separate auxiliary group.
Which is interesting because I thought Masons were Shriners.
You might say it like this. Every Shriner is a Mason, but not every Mason is a Shriner.
Okay.
So the 32nd degree is the highest earned degree, and then the 33rd degree is honorary.
Okay.
Yes. So the first three degrees are the ones that most people would be familiar with. And to enter into that degree of the Blue Lodge, the first one, you would be outside the lodge, be blindfolded. You would have one pant leg pulled up and one shirt sleeve pulled down, and you would be asked to knock on the door, and they would say, "Who is it?" And you would say, "I'm in darkness and I'm seeking the light of Freemasonry." And that's when you are allowed in, and you're taken before like an altar where there's a Bible placed, and they refer to all these items as furniture. So the Bible is referred to as a piece of furniture, interestingly enough.
Wow.
But they're standing before the leader of the local lodge, who is called the worshipful master, which I think any Christian in good conscience would have a hard time referring to a man as worshipful master. But that it's all shrouded in pageantry and mystery, and that's what they put everything under, this guise of mystery and symbolism. But that's where the next interesting step comes in, and why a Christian should really have discernment there, is the third degree of the Blue Lodge is called the Master Mason, and there's a little morality play, if you will, which harkens back to the ancient mystery religions and the mystery plays of the pagan religions of Babylon and Egypt. It goes kind of like this. There's a biblical character named Hiram, who was the first artist mentioned in the Bible, and he was given authority to build the temple of Solomon. And here's this play that uses this character in a fictional way. And the character is played in symbolically by the candidate. Okay, so here's the candidate playing Hiram Abiff. And he's taken before the portico of the temple, and he's saying that the people that are found worthy after we build the temple will be given secrets to pass themselves off as a master mason and travel from place to place and earn a master's wages. Well, three of the workers overhear this, and they conspire to steal the secrets, kill Hiram, and pass himself off as master mason. So they end up taking him, and they kill him, and so there we have an instance of death. And so they take him out into the desert, and they bury him in the sand. And at this point, the candidate is pushed over and covered in a sheet, so we have this idea of burial. And then the next interesting thing is that there's a lot of symbolism with handshakes, secret handshakes, grips, and there's a grip for each level. And the first grip to raise him back up from the dirt is used, and it's not strong enough. It slips. So they use the next level, and it's not strong enough either. It slips. So they have to teach him the new grip, and it's the grip of the Master Mason. And it looks something like this, and it's strong enough to raise him, and the wording is something like from a dead level to a living perpendicular. So we have this imagery of death, of burial, and of resurrection, in a sense.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. Very interesting.
So you have this idea of a false baptism. Now, I come from a Baptist tradition, and it's a very big deal that once you profess Christ, that the next step in discipleship is to be baptized. And we do so in the Baptist church by immersion. And so that picture of death, burial, and resurrection. And it's a sense of the outward sign of an inward reality. And what's interesting is that, in a sense, symbolically, the candidate in the Blue Lodge is, in a way, baptized into Freemasonry, identifying themselves with it. You know, it's just a little too close for comfort if you're a discerning Christian.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. So those are very, very interesting parallels. Now, you say there's a difference between the Masons and the Shriners, and I see another one you have here is the Illuminati. Now, I hear a lot about the Illuminati, these are conspirators, global conspirators who are trying to take over the world.
Exactly, exactly. Most of what I've been able to find on the Illuminati is mostly made up by conspirator theorists, actually. And the idea there is there was a guy named Adam Weishaupt, I believe, who began this organization of about nine people. There might be more, but nine was the upper circle, right? And their plan, believe it or not, was to infiltrate the Masons and to gain control. And the whole idea is based around this New World Order. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories about the dollar bill and the streets of Washington, D.C., either looking like an owl or a square and compass.
Yeah,
it does have the shape of a star somewhat. And if you look on a map, you can kind of see it. But you know, so what? If it it's not like, it's interesting, and it makes for good movie plots. And but as far as I can tell, the Illuminati is more or less fantastical, if anything. And there's not some super organization that ties all these together. But I will say this about the Shriners being an outcrop of the Masons. Mm-hmm. They're somewhat of an honor society of Masons. And you can even go on beyond that, and there's something called the Royal Order of the Jesters. And it just seems to never end. There are so many auxiliary groups. There are groups
for the
women.
There's a female version, yes.
Yes, the Order of the Eastern Star. And part of that is because, and I wish we had time to go into all this, but only men are allowed to be into the Masonic Lodge. And to a degree, it's exclusive and it's bigoted compared to Christianity, which is exclusive but not bigoted. Okay, anyone can come. But you see that there's a lot of there's segregation there. And, of course, there's a branch called Prince Hall Masonry, which is the African-American branch. And then there's...
Now, I heard something about African-Americans weren't allowed to join the regular masonry. Was that true?
Yes, in the beginning. Now that's not so much the case. But there's a second group called the Prince Hall Freemasons. Prince Hall was the name of, I believe, the first African-American to be initiated into the lodge, and along with 14 other African-Americans. This is about 1775. So they've been around, but the two have remained separate. Even though the idea is the same behind, they still wear the apron.
Right, okay.
Yes, and the apron is interesting because that symbol is supposed to be their righteousness at the great white throne judgment. And here's something from their literature that says, standing before the great white throne to receive the judgment for the deeds while done here in the body, may it be your portion to hear from him who sitteth as the judge supreme of the welcome words, well done, good and faithful servant. Now, that's interesting because the Great White Throne Judgment, no one's going to be found righteous there. So it's this idea of good works and benevolence of the Mason to the, you know, his brotherhood of man that's going to make him better. Their slogan is to make good men better.
Right.
But we know the Bible teaches no one is good, not one. No one is righteous.
Right.
Our righteousness comes from Christ alone, not from anything that we can do.
Right. Good point. Okay, so you were talking about the Illuminati, mm-hmm. and conspiracy theories.
Yes.
Well, then that leads to the next one, Opus Dei.
Opus Dei, yes.
Now, anyone who's familiar with the Da Vinci Code is familiar with Opus Dei.
Yes.
I've never heard of Opus Dei until I was reading the Da Vinci Code.
Right.
What in the world is Opus Dei?
Well, Opus Dei actually is Latin for works of God, or God's work. And it's basically... to a point, Freemasonry for Catholics, even though that's not quite true, it's more of a radical branch, or maybe a cult even, within Catholicism that is something like Marian apparitions, the people that follow that. It has, sometimes the church will give their imprimatur on the validity of it, and other times they shy away from it. But it mostly is its own group, and it was popularized by the Da Vinci Code. I can't find any connection between what the Da Vinci Code is saying about Opus Dei having secret connections to the Grail and Mary and bringing the Knights Templar into all that, even though... some people think the Knights Templar were a split off of that whole era in time and went up to, after they were wiped out in France, some escaped to England, and that's where the beginning of modern Freemasonry started.
Okay,
so
okay.
It all kind of comes into a big circle. They're all connected. But most people would say that that's more of a political group,
right.
Fascist. And some people even blame that group for being behind World War II and the Concordat signed with the Vatican and Hitler and basically putting Hitler into power and Mussolini and being really complicated.
Let's move on to the next one, Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones, yes.
Last one.
Yes, that one is exclusive to the campus of Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. It is somewhat of a fraternal organization or fraternity. It is seen as grooming political leaders. The number 322 is associated with it, and some people say there's some sort of mystical number to a mystical message behind it, but it stands for the year it was founded, 1932. So there's the 3-2, and it was based on a fraternity that was already extant in Germany. So second chapter, 3-2-2. Hmm. And there are some fantastical claims there, too, like they have the skull of Geronimo, and apparently they meet in, well, they do meet in a place called the Tomb on campus there. It's called the Tomb. And inside, there's all these skeletons, and one of them is in the secret chamber where they keep all the secrets and the protocol and the ritualistic manuscripts they have, and they have a skeleton there sitting in a chair named Madame Pompadour. There's a lot of skeleton imagery, a lot of death imagery, and it's supposed to remind young men of their mortality and what they're going to do in this life. You'll see a lot of skeleton imagery in the symbols of Masonry as well, but the symbols of death, it glorified almost to a sense, is something that I think a Christian should be weary of, because all the skeleton imagery in the Bible is seen as not a good thing necessarily, unless you're talking about Ezekiel and the bones come back together and there's a symbol of resurrection again.
Well, speaking of that, speaking of Christians, should a Christian be involved in any of these secret societies?
Well, I think you might ask, yes, can a Christian be involved? I think Christians are capable of being involved in all sorts of things. They shouldn't be, only because you want to be very careful on how you identify yourself and who you identify yourself with, being an ambassador for Christ. Should they? No, I don't believe so. I think there's better ways to spend your time, and here's why. Because when you do good things, and the Shriners and Masons and all these groups are all out to do good things. No one's out to destroy the world. I don't think anybody wants that. But when you are doing good things, who's receiving the glory?
Good point.
So I think as a Christian, we should be doing things in the name of Jesus Christ and being a light for Him and letting our actions draw people to Him through us. Right. So when you're doing good things like the free hospitals the Shriners do, what a great thing. Yeah. But wouldn't it be great if, you know, that was Christian?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a very good point because, you know, we are, the purpose that we're here as Christians is that we are supposed to be salt and light. And we are supposed to be a reflection of the light of Christ.
Yes.
And how have we been a reflection of the light of Christ if our good works are actually giving glory to an organization that is a secret society?
That's right. Your interests are divided.
Right.
You don't want to be a double-minded. And you don't want to be unequally yoked either. The Bible speaks about do not be unequally yoked. And a lot of times that's applied to marriage. But I think it also should apply to where your beliefs are as well.
Yeah. Is there a connection between these secret societies and paganism?
To a degree, yes, especially within the Masonic symbols. A lot of it is quoted in the official books, like, for instance, Morals and Dogma, where it talks about the symbols being derived from the ancient pagan mysteries, sun worship, moon worship, the worship of fertility goddesses. And you see that in the Bible as well as being opposed Baal and Ashtaroth. You see in the Old Testament, the god of thunderstorms, rain, crops, the goddess Astarte, the fertility goddess. Some of the symbols are representative of sexuality. The obelisk, for one. A lot of times you'll see in a graveyard, instead of a tombstone or a cross, you'll see an obelisk. And that's a Mason. A lot of times an obelisk will have the symbol of the square and compass on it, actually with the G in the middle.
You know, it's interesting because when my grandfather died, who I say was a 32nd degree Mason, he had a Mason burial.
Yes.
The Masons actually did the entire funeral.
They do. They do. They have their own funeral procession and their funeral rites, and they'll do that in conjunction. A lot of times if they were a Christian, they'll have the Christian part of it, and then the Masons will come in and do their thing, and Masons are buried in their apron. Yes.
With Christianity, we're supposed to do good works, and we're supposed to let the world see our good works, because as we were saying before, it's supposed to give glory to God. Whenever you're doing stuff in secret, you know, there's this imagery in the Bible about secret things being done in darkness.
Yes.
And because of that, I mean, that alone should give us cause or pause. Because I see a lot of Christians involved in Masonry. And to me, I just don't see the compatibility. To me, it's incompatible. But evidently, a lot of Christians don't see that incompatibility.
Absolutely. Here's something from Albert Pike, actually, that touches on that. And this should make a Christian skin crawl if they want to try to make the two compatible. Here's how, speaking on Masonry, it references all the great reformers. It sees Moses, the lawgiver of the Jews, in Confucius and Zoroaster, in Jesus of Nazareth, and in the Arabian iconoclasts, great teachers of morality and eminent reformers, if no more. So what they do is, they just like the cults do, they take Jesus and they minimize him. Jesus isn't God, he's just another great moral teacher.
Yeah, yeah, that is a problem. When you try to put Jesus in the class with all these other moral teachers, whenever you try to put Jesus in the class with Buddha and Confucius, we have a problem, because Jesus is the only one who claimed to be God, the only one who demonstrated to be God, the only one who spoke in the universe, left into existence, the only one who gives us salvation. How to put him in the same, putting him in the same class as these other people is basically blasphemy.
Exactly. Other teachers, for instance, especially from the East, would say, here is a way, or here is a way to the light. Christ is claiming to be the way and the light.
Yeah.
Totally different.
And I hear that, you know, they claim to be religion neutral, like you could be a Buddhist, you could be a Muslim.
Absolutely. There comes a point, though, where you have to draw a line, because all these different religious traditions have different teachings, and just logically, the opposite of true is false. So if you're making a truth claim, if you're going to teach something as being true, then the opposite of it has to be false.
Okay. Joel Paulus, thanks for being on the show, talking with me about secret societies, a Christian perspective. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
All are invited to attend a Christianity 101 class that HC will be teaching at the Journey Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. Topics include the nature of God, creation, salvation, the end times, and more. The class will begin at 11 a.m. following the 10 a.m. service starting July the 6th and will continue for 8 weeks. You can find out more information by calling 704-264-9922 or visiting the website at journeycharlotte.com.
The preceding show has been sponsored by Giving an Answer with your host, H.C. Felder. So you can hear this broadcast as well as other episodes by visiting us online at givinganswer.org. You can also order a CD or a DVD of the studio recording by calling me at 704-248-7840. And remember, this show will only stay on the air if people continue to help us buy airtime. So I encourage you to consider making a tax-deductible financial donation to this ministry. That phone number again is 704-248-7840. And be sure to join me again next time on Giving an Answer.